or remain for a while as subtle distractions. Just keep the breath at the center of your attention. If the emotional intensity associated with these mental objects comes back, repeat the process as many times as needed until the disturbance goes away completely. Handling emotionally charged materials isn't always easy. They can persist for a surprisingly long time. But don't be concerned if at first you don't succeed. You will have many more opportunities. The material will continue to return until you can greet it with full acceptance and equanimity. No matter how many times it resurfaces, acknowledge, allow, and accept it. Once this material finally goes away on its own, it will no longer disturb your meditations. Not only that, it will also stop affecting your daily life in negative ways. In summary, when the mind is quieted through meditation, charged emotions, thoughts, and visions well up from the unconscious into consciousness. There they become gross distractions. To overcome them, simply make them the object of your attention, acknowledging and accepting them until they fade away on their own. That's it. It's not important to consider why you're having these thoughts or where they come from. That kind of discursive analysis takes you away from the real work of meditation. In fact, there's no need to do anything at all. Whenever you judge, instead of just observing, mindfulness is less effective. By simply allowing material from the unconscious to come up, by mindfully bearing witness and not reacting, you reprogram the mind more deeply than you ever could through intellectual analysis. You're purifying your mind of all the afflictions you've accumulated throughout your entire life. This process is essential for personal growth and spiritual development in general, and for the final stages of this practice in particular. When purification occurs, welcome it, because only by working through our problems can we finally be free of them. Purification of the mind. The emotional purification in stage 4 can be the equivalent of years of therapy and is crucial for progressing through the 10 stages. When we can observe and accept the thoughts, emotions, and images driving unconscious programming, the illuminating power of mindfulness works its magic. Deep, unconscious processes are informed that the circumstances responsible for our conditioning no longer exist, and that the emotional reactions produced are no longer useful. We are not even the same person anymore. This new information reprograms those unconscious processes at a deep level, and the very structure of our personality is transformed and purified. We become less susceptible to destructive emotions and are better able to appreciate and cultivate more skillful qualities of mind. It's not uncommon for meditation to bring up things that might otherwise have stayed repressed for our whole life. The best thing you could ever do for yourself is to confront and work through this material. However, some people have so much trouble with this emotionally charged material that the instructions given here don't work for them. If you're acutely disturbed by what comes up, do whatever you can to ground yourself. Take your mind off things through companionship, good food, exercise, or try watching a movie. Having someone to talk to can be very helpful, provided they know how to be a good listener. However, never listen to anyone's advice unless it comes from a meditation teacher with experience in these purifications or a professionally trained counselor. If anyone else starts offering you advice, thank them for their help and gracefully change the subject. If you find you're consistently overwhelmed by the intensity of what comes up in this practice, switch to the loving-kindness meditation. Practice loving-kindness until you can easily generate strong feelings of compassion for yourself and others. Then try resuming stage 4 practice. If you find the material is still too intense to deal with on your own, seek professional help. Sustaining attention by engaging with the meditation object. Now let's look at how to sustain attention on the breath after having dealt with the kind of powerful, gross distractions we've just discussed. Whenever you return to the breath, you should intensify your focus, but not too much. Just enough to keep any other subtle distractions from becoming gross distractions. Intensifying your focus helps keep distractions at bay. When you ignore them for a while, they will fade from awareness. To help you intensify your focus, use the practices of following and connecting, described in Stage 3. In Stage 4, connecting is particularly useful. You observe changes in the breath over time and notice, or connect, how those changes correspond to shifts in your state of mind. Don't focus on the breath too intensely for too long at this stage. If you attempt exclusive, single-pointed attention before you have enough training, you lose introspective awareness, becoming vulnerable to distractions and dullness. Make your attention more intense, but in as relaxed and gentle a way as possible. It helps to aim for a balance between attention and introspective awareness. It's like holding a robin's egg, firmly, so you don't drop it, but also gently, so you don't break it. Learning to overcome strong dullness. As you become more skilled at dealing with distractions, strong dullness will become your next major obstacle. We gave you some tools in Stage 3 for working with the drowsiness caused by strong dullness. In this stage, your goal is to overcome strong dullness entirely. Dullness occurs when we turn the mind inward, which reduces the constant flow of thoughts and sensations that usually keep the mind energized and alert. Therefore, the overall energy level of the mind drops. With less stimulation, the brain winds down toward sleep, and the mind grows dull. This normally happens when we're fatigued or at bedtime. In meditation, it's not just turning inward that decreases mental energy, but when we focus on the breath too intensely and for too long, we are also excluding the thoughts and sensations that usually keep the mind alert. This is another reason why looking beyond the meditation object with peripheral awareness is so important. When we stay aware of things in the background, we continue to stimulate brain activity and won't sink into dullness. Overcoming strong dullness. To deal effectively with strong dullness, we need to distinguish between two different kinds of subtle dullness: progressive subtle dullness and stable subtle dullness. As the name implies, progressive subtle dullness eventually leads to strong dullness, and the longer it's present, the more likely strong dullness will arise. Therefore, you'll have to learn to recognize progressive subtle dullness in order to overcome strong dullness. On the other hand, stable subtle dullness doesn't lead to strong dullness. In this stage, tolerating stable subtle dullness keeps the mind from becoming agitated and restless. You'll lose some vividness, clarity, and intensity of perception, but will have a more peaceful and stable state of mind, with fewer distractions. Only in Stage 5 will you work to overcome all forms of subtle dullness. There are three simple steps for defeating strong dullness. The first step is to recognize its presence and rouse your mind out of it using an appropriate antidote. This can be a challenge. When the dullness is deep enough to the point that you're drowsy, you will have no introspective awareness to alert you to the problem. You only realize there's dullness after you find yourself nodding off, snoring, or dreaming. If this happens, try to wake yourself up completely. And if it's only progressive subtle dullness you're experiencing, rouse yourself from that as well. With either type of dullness, you must first re-energize the mind. Once you've done that, the second step is to rely on introspective awareness to notice when dullness returns, before it grows too strong. When it returns, apply the appropriate antidote once more. The sooner you notice progressive subtle dullness, the easier it is to counteract. The third step of the process is to repeat steps 1 and 2 until the dullness doesn't come back at all. Because subtle dullness impairs your introspective awareness, you will often have trouble recognizing when dullness has returned. Step 2. However, with time and practice, you will learn to identify and correct for progressive subtle dullness before it grows too strong. Also, as you learn to recognize the onset more quickly, the antidotes you use won't have to be as strong, and they'll prove more effective. When noticing and correcting becomes automatic, you'll have completely overcome strong dullness. A well-trained mind won't slip into strong dullness, except when extremely fatigued. Eventually, even progressive subtle dullness will rarely occur. You will still experience stable, subtle dullness until you overcome it in stage 5. 3 steps for overcoming strong dullness. 1. Apply a strong enough antidote to completely awaken the mind whenever strong dullness or progressive, subtle dullness is present. 2. Use introspective awareness to recognize the return of dullness as soon as possible, before subtle dullness becomes strong dullness, so you can apply the appropriate antidote. 3. Repeat this process until the dullness doesn't return. The antidotes for dullness. When you're experiencing strong dullness, use the antidotes described in stage 3 to rouse yourself. For instance, take a few deep breaths and exhale forcibly through your mouth, creating resistance by pursing your lips. Or try clenching all your muscles, holding them for a few seconds, and suddenly release and relax. Repeat this several times. Another helpful method is to suck in your gut while tightening and releasing the perineum. These are all invigorating and work well if the dullness isn't too strong. For very strong dullness, try walking meditation for a few minutes, or meditate while standing. Standing meditation can be tiring and uncomfortable, but it's quite effective and sometimes necessary. If nothing else works, get up and splash some cold water on your face, then go back to practicing. When the dullness isn't as strong, just expanding your peripheral awareness can sometimes be enough. Enlarge the area of your awareness to encompass all bodily sensations, sounds, smells, and so forth, while keeping your attention on the breath. You can also shift attention away from the breath, making your whole body and environment the meditation object for a while. You can also try meditating with your eyes open. If progressive subtle dullness is caught soon enough, any of these techniques can help you overcome it. If you recognize the presence of progressive subtle dullness early enough, you can raise the energy in the mind just by strengthening your intention to observe the sensations of the breath clearly and in more detail. However, this will only work for very subtle dullness, identified very early on. And remember, if you make your attention too intense for too long, mindfulness will fade. Also, focusing too intensely can make you overly energized and agitated. If this happens, relax the force of your attention to allow a little subtle dullness in, decreasing the energy level of the mind. The key to using close attention is to strike a balance. You don't want your focus to be too intense and tight, nor too relaxed and loose. When dullness doesn't return for at least 3 to 5 minutes, you can be confident that the antidote was strong enough and that you've lifted yourself out fully. Whenever dullness returns sooner, your antidote wasn't strong enough or applied for long enough. If it returns almost immediately, you're in a state called sinking. You're sinking into dullness so quickly that your efforts to escape aren't enough. This means you need a much stronger antidote. The basic rule is, do whatever's necessary to re-energize the mind to a state of full alertness. During this stage, dullness will often return, no matter how strongly you rouse yourself. So always be vigilant. Don't be surprised or disappointed when it returns. Just keep practicing. And be encouraged. The sooner you catch dullness, the more easily you can rouse the mind, and the closer you are to overcoming strong dullness completely. Be prepared to spend entire sessions working with dullness. Welcome it as an opportunity to investigate the nature of dullness. At some point during your sit, usually after many interventions, dullness may even disappear entirely. When this happens, you'll notice your mind feels light and alert, and with experience, you'll be able to recognize when all traces of dullness have disappeared completely. You have achieved the goal for this stage when progressive, subtle dullness rarely arises, and when it does, is quickly noticed and corrected for. The seduction of dullness. Strong dullness can be a seductive trap. States of dullness lead to dream imagery, archetypal visions, pleasurable sensations, paranormal experiences like channeling, past life recollections, and the overall feeling that something profound is occurring. If you anchor attention on the breath, you can sustain them for a long time without falling asleep. In certain traditions, these states are purposely cultivated. However, when it comes to cultivating attention and awareness, these states are only a hindrance. Remember that visionary experiences, brilliant insights, and any other seemingly profound encounters should all be avoided at this stage. When these experiences arise, simply resolve to let go of them. Strengthen your intention to observe the details of the breath as clearly and vividly as possible. Ignore the visions, bring yourself out of dullness, and carry on meditating. This may not be easy if, in another system of practice, you've used such experiences and found meaning and value in them. If you find some significance in a vision that arises, set it aside and explore it at another time. Conclusion. You have mastered stage 4 when you're free from both gross distractions and strong dullness. Physical sensations, thoughts, memories, and emotions still arise, but they no longer draw attention away. Dullness no longer leads to drowsiness, nor causes perception of the breath sensations to grow dim or take on hypnagogic distortions. By the end of stage 4, you can direct and sustain your attention at will. This is a unique and powerful ability. The strength of your mindfulness has also reached an important threshold. Attention can precisely examine every part of the breath with little effort. Your perception of the meditation object has become nonverbal and non-discursive. Also, awareness has grown more powerful and can clearly discern how the breath changes over time. With such strong attention and clear awareness, the words of the Buddha take on new significance. Breathing in a long breath, he knows he breathes in a long breath. Breathing out a long breath, he knows he breathes out a long breath. Breathing in a short breath, he knows he breathes in a short breath. Breathing out a short breath, he knows he breathes out a short breath. Anapanasati Sutta. Fourth Interlude. The Moments of Consciousness Model. The model of conscious experience you learned about in the first interlude introduced the ideas of attention and peripheral awareness. While that model was helpful for working through the first 4 stages, it was incomplete. As you progress in your practice, you'll need more detailed models of the mind to help make sense of your new experiences. Here we present the Moments of Consciousness model. It builds on what you've already learned, recasting many of the concepts already used. This model is drawn from the Theravada Buddhist Abhidhamma and includes some elaborations and expansions by a later Buddhist school known as the Yogacara. This interlude and the next take ideas about the mind from both these sources and explore them using modern terminology and a more science-based framework. Keep in mind that this model is intended to help you understand both your own experiences and the meditation instructions better. Don't bother with trying to decide whether the description is literally true or not. As your meditation skills mature, you'll have plenty of time to decide what you think based on your own experiences. What's more important is that the model is useful for making sense of and working more effectively in your practice. Moments of consciousness. Our everyday conscious experience of the world, the thoughts and sensations that arise and pass away, appear to flow together seamlessly from one moment to the next. However, according to the moments of consciousness model, this is an illusion. If we observed closely enough, we would find that experience is actually divided into individual moments of consciousness. These conscious mind moments occur one at a time, in much the same way that a motion picture film is actually divided into separate frames. Because the frames pass so quickly and are so numerous, motion on the film seems fluid. Similarly, these discrete moments of consciousness are so brief and numerous that they seem to form one continuous and uninterrupted stream of consciousness. According to this model, consciousness is a series of discrete events rather than continuous, because we can only be conscious of information coming from one sense organ at a time. Moments of seeing are distinct from moments of hearing, moments of smelling from moments of touch, and so on. Therefore, each is a separate mental event with its own unique content. Moments of visual experience can be interspersed with moments of auditory, tactile, mental, and other sensory experience, but no two can happen at the same time. For example, a moment of visual consciousness must end before you can have a thought, a moment of mental consciousness about what you've just seen. It is only because these different moments replace each other so quickly that seeing, hearing, thinking, and so forth all seem to happen at the same time. The moments of consciousness model posits that within each of these moments, nothing changes. They are truly like freeze frames. Even our experience of watching something move is the result of many separate moments of visual consciousness, one rapidly following the next. Therefore, all conscious experience, without exception, consists of individual, brief moments, each containing a single, static chunk of information. In that sense, we can say that each mind moment provides only a single object of consciousness. Because moments of consciousness coming from different sense organs contain such different information, consciousness is less like a film in which every frame is similar to the last, and more like a string of differently colored beads. While this model is quite different from how we usually think about consciousness, it's not just a nice theory someone thought up. The basic premise of distinct moments of consciousness arising and passing away in sequence is based on the actual meditation experiences of advanced practitioners from across a broad range of traditions. It's an experience that the composers of the Abhidhamma, who formulated this model, either had firsthand or learned about from other advanced meditators. It's also an experience you yourself will have in the later stages. Yet long before you do, this model will help you, just as it has helped other practitioners for over 2 millennia. 7 different types of moments of consciousness. In this model, the different types of moments of consciousness vary according to which of our senses provides the object in a given moment. In all, there are 7 kinds of moments. The first 5 are obvious, since they correspond to the physical senses, sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. The 6th category, maybe less obvious, is called the mind sense, meaning it includes mental objects like thoughts and emotions. Finally, there is a 7th type of consciousness called binding consciousness that integrates the information provided by the other senses. Let's take a closer look at these different kinds of moments of consciousness. Of the 5 physical senses, the last on the list, touch, properly known as somatic sensation, is more complicated and diverse than the first 4. It would be accurate to say that the somatosensory category is actually comprised of many different senses. For example, there's the category of skin sensations, which includes not just touch, but also pressure, movement, and vibration. There's a separate category that includes things like temperature, pain, tickle, itch, and some sexual sensations. Then there's what's called proprioception, the sense that informs us about the position, location, and movement of the parts of our body. Sensations of muscle tension, deep visceral sensations, and the physical sensations we associate with emotions each constitute other distinct categories of sense experience. Finally, the sensations of acceleration, rotation, balance, and gravity make up yet another category completely overlooked by the classical five senses. From a physiological perspective, each of these somatosensory categories is actually a unique sense unto itself, served by its own subsystem within the central nervous system. According to the moments of consciousness model, information from no two of these somatic sense categories can occupy the same moment of consciousness either. Just as we can't see an object and hear a sound at the same time, we can't, for example, sense emotion and feel pain at the same time. So there are, in fact, more than five different kinds of physical senses. It's the same situation with the mind sense. It was traditionally treated as a single sense through which we become conscious of mental objects. Yet in reality, memories, emotions, and abstract thoughts, for example, each derive from distinctly different brain processes, and each provides a unique kind of information. Therefore, information from two different mental categories can't share the same moment of consciousness either. You can't solve an algebra problem while at the same time remembering a childhood pet. We have to recognize that both the mind sense and the somatic sense are actually blanket labels encompassing many sense categories, each conveying its own unique kind of information. However, for the sake of simplicity, we will ignore these diverse senses and just refer to six basic categories of moments of consciousness corresponding to the sight, smell, taste, touch, hearing, and mental senses. However, if the contents of one moment are gone before the next arises, how do these distinct kinds of information ever get integrated with each other in conscious experience? How do we ever put it all together so we can understand what's actually happening? The answer is that the content of many separate moments provided by the first six sense categories get briefly stored in a kind of working memory, where they are combined and integrated with each other. Then, the product of this integration is projected into consciousness as yet another distinct type of mind moment, the combining or binding moment of consciousness. Consider the experience of hearing someone speak. When the contents from visual and auditory moments of consciousness have been combined, binding moments are produced. These binding moments match the sounds we hear to the specific objects we see in our visual field. In other words, our subjective experience is hearing words come from a particular person's mouth. This kind of mental activity also occurs when we watch a movie. Notice how your mind automatically attributes particular voices to specific characters, when in fact the sound originates from speakers in the theater walls. The sound may even be coming from behind you. And, of course, the reason ventriloquists can fool us is because binding moments don't always put the information together in an accurate way. Binding moments are integrated perceptions combining information from the other six senses to produce complex representations of what's happening within and around us. They are regarded as a seventh kind of moment of consciousness, distinct from the other six. Therefore, the seven different kinds of moments of consciousness are sight, sound, smell, taste, somatosensory, and mental, plus the binding moment. Moments of attention and moments of peripheral awareness. Recall from the first interlude that all conscious experience gets filtered through either attention or awareness. They form two distinct ways of knowing the world. But how do attention and awareness fit into this more in-depth model? If all conscious experience consists entirely of the seven kinds of mind moments, what place is there for attention and awareness? It's simple. Any moment of consciousness, whether it's a moment of seeing, hearing, thinking, etc., takes the form of either a moment of attention or a moment of peripheral awareness. Consider a moment of seeing. It could be either a moment of seeing as part of attention or a moment of seeing as part of peripheral awareness. These are the two options. If it's a moment of awareness, it will be broad, inclusive, and holistic, regardless of which of the seven categories it belongs to. A moment of attention, on the other hand, will isolate one particular aspect of experience to focus on. If we examine moments of attention and moments of awareness a bit closer, we see two major differences. First, moments of awareness can contain many objects, while moments of attention contain only a few. Second, the content of moments of awareness undergoes relatively little mental processing, while the content of moments of attention is subject to much more in-depth processing. Of course, these two are not so neatly divided experientially, but understanding these differences will help you appreciate how each functions and their different purposes in organizing subjective reality. Consider the first difference, many objects versus only a few, in terms of hearing. Our ears take in everything audible from our environment. Then our brain processes that information and puts it together in two different ways. First, it creates an auditory background that includes more or less all the different sounds our ears have detected. When that's projected into consciousness, it becomes a moment of auditory peripheral awareness. The other way the brain processes that information is to pick out just some part, say one person's voice, from the total sound in our awareness. When projected into consciousness, that isolated sound becomes the content of a moment of auditory attention. So the brain has two modes of information processing. One creates moments of awareness with many objects, while the other creates moments of attention with just a few. These two modes apply to every kind of sensory information, not just hearing. For example, say you're sitting on a cabin deck in the mountains, gazing out at the view. Each moment of visual awareness will include a variety of objects, mountains, trees, birds, and sky, all at the same time. Auditory moments of awareness will include all the various sounds that make up the audible background, birdsong, wind in the trees, a babbling brook, and so forth, again, all at the same time. On the other hand, moments of visual attention might be restricted just to the bird you're watching on a nearby branch. Auditory attention might include only the sounds the birds are making. Even when your attention is divided among several things at once, perhaps you're knitting or whittling a piece of wood while you sit, moments of attention are still limited to a small number of objects. Finally, binding moments of attention and binding moments of awareness take the content from the preceding sensory moments and combine them into a whole. Sitting on the deck, looking out at the mountain, while carving a piece of wood. Now, let's consider the second difference, the degree of mental processing in moments of awareness versus moments of attention. Individual moments of awareness provide information about a lot of things at once, but the information has only been minimally processed. The result is our familiar experience of peripheral awareness of many things in the background. However, these moments of awareness do include some simple interpretations of sense data. You may be aware that the sounds you hear are from traffic, or that the things in the background of your visual field are trees. These simple concepts help evaluate and categorize all that information, contributing to our understanding of the present context. Although these preliminary interpretations don't usually lead to any kind of action, some part of this information is frequently referred to attention for more analysis. Other times, say when the sound of traffic suddenly includes screeching tires, The information in peripheral awareness can trigger an automatic action, thought, or emotion, any of which can then become an object of attention. Attention's job, on the other hand, is to isolate specific objects in order to analyze and interpret them in more detail. Moments of attention contain conceptual representations, usually from the mind sense. These may be simple concepts related to our immediate experience, actions, thoughts, or emotions, but more often they're elaborate concepts constructed from those simpler concepts. Let's use another example to help clarify the difference in processing between attention and awareness. Imagine that you've just heard an unusual sound. Peripheral awareness may initially attribute that sound to a footstep on the stairs. That is to say, the actual sound has already been replaced with the concept, "someone is walking up the stairs," and peripheral awareness has referred that information to your faculty of attention for further analysis. Notice that it's not the actual sound that becomes the object of attention, but rather the idea of a person walking up the stairs. During the moments of consciousness that follow, attention filters through stored information to interpret the significance of someone coming up the stairs. Once attention arrives at a conclusion, it can then initiate an appropriate response. There is one more subtle difference between moments of awareness and attention worth mentioning. The content of moments of awareness usually comes from the physical senses, while the content of moments of attention usually comes from the mind sense. What had been a sound in awareness, simply attributed to traffic, becomes a concept, like traffic noise, when made into an object of attention. However, this is only a general rule. There are times when moments of attention hold information coming directly from one of the physical senses. But even when a sensory object does become an object of attention, it is quickly replaced by a more complex, highly processed, conceptual formation. For example, paying attention to a tangible object like breath sensations usually generates many more moments of consciousness from the mind sense than from the sense of touch directly, especially for beginning meditators. Moments of attention that include actual sensory information are actually few and far between, greatly outnumbered by those containing conceptual objects such as breath, air, in, out, and nose. Only if you diligently practice following the breath, observing ever finer details, will you train your mind to produce more moments of attention to actual breath sensations. Likewise, there are instances when moments of peripheral awareness involving the mind sense occur. They involve things like a growing feeling of annoyance, or a suspicion that we've forgotten something. Generally, though, people have less peripheral awareness of what's going on in their minds than they do of things in the external environment. This is especially true of the untrained mind. Mindfulness training involves increasing the moments of introspective awareness, moments of peripheral awareness of mental objects, and states and activities of the mind. Non-perceiving mind moments. Non-perceiving mind moments are another important part of the moments of consciousness model. These are potential rather than actual moments of consciousness. No perception occurs because none of the sense organs provides them with any content, but nevertheless they are real mental events, replacing perceived moments of consciousness, and they are associated with a feeling of pleasure. Non-perceiving mind moments are interspersed among perceiving moments of consciousness. According to the model, one of the attributes of every moment of consciousness is a kind of life force or vital energy. Non-perceiving mind moments carry much less of this vital energy than do perceiving moments of consciousness. Therefore, the energy level of the mind depends on the ratio of perceiving to non-perceiving moments. The greater the proportion of non-perceiving mind moments in a given period, the more dullness we experience. In daily life, sensory input constantly enters the mind, continuously stimulating and maintaining its energy level. However, as we pointed out in the first interlude, even this ordinary level of consciousness involves a considerable amount of dullness, as shown by our capacity for increased awareness and alertness under certain circumstances, like in an emergency. This means that ordinary conscious experience includes a significant proportion of non-perceiving mind moments. Dullness grows even stronger if that proportion increases. Conscious intention. So far, we have focused mainly on the passive aspect of these moments of consciousness. Perception. Yet there is an active component in every moment of consciousness as well. Conscious intention. We intend to observe the meditation object. We intend to direct attention away from distractions and return to the meditation object. We intend to sustain attention on it. We intend to engage fully with its details. Intention plays an important role in each moment of consciousness. It determines the objects of subsequent moments of consciousness. The stronger our intention to attend to a particular object, the more moments of attention will subsequently be focused on that object. So, if you intend to watch the breath, the next few moments of consciousness are more likely to take the breath as their object. Although intention is part of every perceiving moment, awareness of these intentions is usually subliminal, unless, of course, the intention itself becomes the object of a moment of consciousness. Intention also exerts a powerful influence on how many of the upcoming mind moments will be perceiving rather than non-perceiving. A strong intention to perceive anything results in more perceiving moments, and vice versa. This, in turn, has a strong effect on the activity and energy levels of the mind. In contrast, intention is completely absent from non-perceiving mind moments. Therefore, they are also non-intending mind moments. Just as the intention of perceiving moments leads to more perceiving moments, the lack of intention in non-perceiving moments results in more non-perceiving moments, meaning dullness grows stronger. Applying the moments of consciousness model to meditation. Let's look at what might happen during a single breath cycle in meditation using the moments of consciousness model, starting with the in-breath. The subjective experience is one of fairly continuous attention to the breath sensations, but with subtle distractions such as knee pain or feelings of restlessness standing out from the background of peripheral awareness. What's actually happening, according to the model, is that a large number of separate moments of consciousness are arising and passing away during the course of the in-breath. Most are moments of attention with the changing sensations of the breath as their object, but others have knee pain, thoughts about lunch, or feelings of restlessness as their object. Attention isn't actually moving between the breath and these distractions. Instead, successive moments of attention hold different objects. Interspersed among these moments of attention are moments of peripheral awareness of other bodily sensations, sounds, thoughts, and emotions, creating the background. Then, during the out-breath, if the pain in your knee draws your attention, a greater proportion of moments of attention are devoted to knee pain than to the breath. Subsequently, the pain is now a gross distraction, and the breath slips away into the background. Each moment of attention to the pain also carries a subconscious intention for subsequent moments to stay on the pain. Because of your training up to this stage, as you begin the next in-breath, moments of introspective peripheral awareness alert you to the presence of pain as a gross distraction. You counter it with your conscious intention to make the breath the focus again, generating more moments of attention to the breath. Now you're attending more closely to the breath, with a strong intention not to pay attention to your knee. Knee pain fades into the background, and the breath sensations become sharper and clearer once more. Forgetting, distraction, and exclusive attention. According to this model, the phenomena of forgetting, gross and subtle distractions, and exclusive focus all exist along a continuum. Where each is located on that continuum depends on only one thing: the proportion of moments of attention in a given period whose object is the sensations of the breath versus some distraction. With forgetting, there are no moments of attention with the breath as the object, only moments with distractions as the object. With gross distractions, there are more moments devoted to the distraction than to the breath. With subtle distractions, there are more moments devoted to the breath than to the distraction. Finally, the exclusive focus of an advanced practitioner lies on the far end of the spectrum, because all content is related to a single, clearly defined theme. Distractions rarely, if ever, become objects of moments of attention. As you can determine, stable attention simply means that most of your moments of attention are devoted to the meditation object. How many moments of peripheral awareness you have has nothing to do with it. However, the process of developing stable attention required that you work with introspective peripheral awareness to overcome forgetting and gross distractions. In other words, you use mindfulness, the optimal interaction between moment of attention and moment of awareness, to gradually develop stable attention. Mindfulness, peripheral awareness, and attention. Mindfulness means that in whatever situation we find ourselves, the balance between moments of attention and moments of awareness is just right. Whenever we lose this balance, we lose mindfulness. The solution to any loss of mindfulness is to increase the total power of consciousness. That means increasing the proportion of actively perceiving versus non-perceiving mind moments. To do this, we have to convert non-perceiving mind moments into perceiving moments of attention and awareness. This increase leads to a more efficient balance between attention and awareness, allowing us to remain mindful in most situations. If consciousness is more powerful, we'll have enough perceiving mind moments to sustain peripheral awareness while keeping attention on whatever task we're doing, even when multitasking. To make this point clear, let's take, as an example, people with attention deficit disorder, which is basically a form of involuntary multitasking. People with ADD will definitely have a harder time increasing peripheral awareness in the earlier stages, since their attention is so unstable to begin with. But by increasing the total number of perceiving mind moments, they can generate enough moments of awareness to achieve a balance of attention and awareness. By doing so, they're as able as anyone to achieve a high level of mindfulness. But is mindfulness compatible with single-pointedness, the ability to focus on the meditation object to the exclusion of everything else? The answer is yes. Even while moments of attention are focused exclusively on one thing, we can still have enough moments of peripheral awareness intermixed to remain mindful. Again, we need enough conscious power to have the necessary awareness accompanying attention. Otherwise, as the number of moments devoted to objects of attention increase, the number of moments of awareness must drop, because we simply won't have enough moments of consciousness available to go around. Up to this point, you've been cultivating moments of peripheral awareness that were mostly extrospective. Now, from stage 5 onward, you'll practice increasing the moments of introspective awareness, eventually leading to a new level of metacognitive introspective awareness. That is, you will be aware of your state of mind in every moment, even as you focus on the breath. Dullness. Dullness is determined by the number of non-perceiving moments mixed in with perceiving moments. As the proportion of non-perceiving moments increases, we experience more subtle dullness. Increase it even more, and we experience strong dullness. When the proportion becomes great enough, we fall asleep. When all perceiving moments have disappeared, we are completely unconscious. Unconsciousness and deep sleep are at one end of a continuum. At the other end, where all your mind moments are actively perceiving moments of consciousness, we experience the ultimate degree of alertness. As we pointed out earlier, ordinary consciousness includes a significant proportion of non-perceiving mind moments. Therefore, the different degrees of alertness of everyday life are actually varying degrees of stable, subtle dullness. That means we are already in subtle dullness even before we sit down to meditate. The only reason the subtle dullness of daily life is stable is because there are enough different stimuli constantly streaming in, producing new moments of consciousness, to keep us alert. But when we start meditating, we cut off much of that stimulation by turning away from sensations and thoughts toward a relatively boring meditation object. When the proportion of perceiving moments of consciousness starts falling, the energy level of the mind falls as well. And remember, non-perceiving moments are also non-intending moments, so they don't generate any intent to perceive in subsequent moments. Therefore, even more perceiving moments become non-perceiving and non-intending moments. If there's no intervention, this cycle turns the stable, subtle dullness of daily life into the progressive, subtle dullness of meditation. If this isn't checked, it becomes strong dullness and drowsiness. In stage 3, you learned to maintain a balance between attention and peripheral awareness so you didn't become too inwardly focused and fall asleep. These moments of extrospective awareness helped keep your mind energized. In stage 4, you learned to use the power of intention to increase the energy level of the mind enough to overcome progressive, subtle dullness before it became strong dullness. The mind is now able to sustain a state of stable, subtle dullness during meditation, just as it does in daily life. In stage 5, you will learn ways to reduce the proportion of non-perceiving moments and to increase the proportion of perceiving moments. You will have less subtle dullness, more conscious power, and therefore greater mindfulness. A strong intention to perceive in every moment of consciousness is the real antidote to dullness in meditation. Powerful imagery, visions, and a sense of having experienced something profound often occur with strong dullness. These aren't actually a part of dullness itself. Rather, the large proportion of non-perceiving, non-intending moments creates an opportunity for deep subconscious content to well up into consciousness. With so many mind moments unoccupied by external stimuli or intentional objects, otherwise subconscious material can become the object of perceiving moments. Dreaming happens in the same way. Drumming, chanting, repetitive bodily movements, and other shamanic practices are used to purposely induce the same kind of openness and receptivity. However, in these cases, the practitioner usually has some prior intention for these visionary objects to arise. The moments of consciousness model will prove useful for understanding both the problem of subtle dullness and how to overcome it in stage 5. It will also prove useful for the later stages. Remember, this model and the others presented in this book were originally developed by meditators for meditators to help them achieve the ultimate goals of spiritual practice. Stage 5. Overcoming subtle dullness and increasing mindfulness. 5. The goal of stage 5 is to overcome subtle dullness and increase the power of mindfulness. Set and hold the intention to notice and immediately correct for subtle dullness. Powerful mindfulness will become a habit of the mind. Practice goals for stage 5. At the start of stage 5, attention is much more stable. You're free from gross distraction, but still experience subtle distraction. You've also overcome strong dullness and progressive subtle dullness, but remain in a state of stable, subtle dullness. Your goals for this stage are to completely overcome the tendency to slip more deeply into stable, subtle dullness, and to heighten the power and clarity of consciousness. In other words, you want to develop more powerful mindfulness that includes vivid attention and strong peripheral awareness. To achieve this, you'll learn to recognize when subtle dullness starts to deepen. Then you'll learn to correct it and restore your mind to its previous alertness. Finally, having recognized and corrected for subtle dullness, you'll increase the power of your mindfulness even more. You've mastered stage 5 when you've completely overcome stable, subtle dullness, and the intensity of mindfulness actually increases as your session progresses. The danger of subtle dullness. This new level of stable attention is precisely what makes us more vulnerable to slipping into a deeper state of sustained, subtle dullness. That's because the mental agitation that stimulated the mind and helped keep us awake in the earlier stages has subsided. As subtle dullness deepens, it causes both peripheral awareness and subtle distractions to fade. If we don't recognize this as a sign of subtle dullness, it can easily be mistaken for the strong, exclusive focus of stage 6. The pleasant feelings that accompany subtle dullness can also be misinterpreted as first signs of the meditative joy of advanced stages. Without guidance, meditators often confuse a deeper state of subtle dullness with having achieved the more lofty states of later stages. We can sustain this type of subtle dullness for very long periods. It's often described in these kinds of terms. My concentration was so deep, an hour seemed like only minutes. Or, I don't know where I went, but I was just gone and felt so peaceful and happy. When the pleasure of dullness is particularly strong, and our peripheral awareness of thoughts and sensations fades completely, our meditation can even seem to fit the description of a meditative absorption, jhana. We can quickly get attached to such experiences, prizing them as proof of our meditative skills. Yet relative to the practice goals in this book, they are complete dead ends. It's crucial we learn to recognize and overcome subtle dullness to progress in your practice. Therefore, do not skip this stage. Overcoming subtle dullness. Subtle dullness has three characteristics. 1. The vividness and clarity of the meditation object decline. 2. Both extrospective and introspective peripheral awareness fade. 3. There is a comfortable, relaxed, and pleasant feeling. These occur together, though only one or two may be obvious at a time. We need to learn to identify these characteristics in order to know when subtle dullness is growing deeper. The characteristics of subtle dullness. Loss of vividness. As subtle dullness deepens, the sensations of the breath are no longer as vivid, and your perception of the fine details aren't as sharp and clear as before. Once you learn to look for this change in perception, it's quite noticeable. An increase in the number of subtle distractions also causes a loss of vividness and clarity. This is because distractions are competing with the breath for available moments of attention. It's a simple correlation. If there's an increase in subtle distractions, there will be a decrease in the vividness and clarity of the meditation object. And if there's a decrease in subtle distractions, the meditation object will be more discernible. You may have already noticed this, but if not, make a point of observing what happens to the meditation object when subtle distractions increase and decrease. With the normal ebb and flow of subtle distractions at this stage, you can easily observe these moment-by-moment changes in vividness and clarity. Becoming familiar with how subtle distractions affect the appearance of the breath will help you recognize when dullness is doing the same thing. Although dullness and distractions provide similar changes in perception, when dullness is the cause, vividness and clarity decline more gradually, without as much fluctuation. And, of course, there's no increase in the number of subtle distractions. Vividness and clarity decline because non-perceiving mind moments gradually replace perceiving ones. You must become skilled at recognizing this decline. Just like with strong dullness in stage 4, we rely on introspective awareness to alert us to the loss of vividness and clarity so we can increase the intensity of our perception again. Yet this isn't so easy, because it's precisely when subtle dullness deepens that introspective awareness starts to fade. The fading of extrospective and introspective awareness. Initially, your perception of the breath is clear and vivid, and you remain mindfully aware of physical sensations and mental objects in the periphery. But when subtle dullness deepens, your field of conscious awareness shrinks. Sounds and bodily sensations fade from awareness, sometimes becoming imperceptible. Thoughts are fewer and don't occur as often. At the same time, feelings of relaxation and contentment grow, eventually dominating introspective awareness. You will be introspectively aware of a sense of comfort and ease rather than of dullness. This is a tricky situation. Introspective awareness, the very thing you need in order to catch deepening subtle dullness, has itself been affected by subtle dullness. This problem is similar to the one in stage 3. There, you needed introspective awareness to detect gross distractions and drowsiness, but it wasn't developed enough yet to do the job. So instead, you used attention to check in, looking into the mind for distraction and dullness. In this stage, you will also periodically check in with attention to look for the presence of subtle dullness. The pleasure of dullness. Having dealt with pain and discomfort in the preceding stage, it's now easier to sit comfortably for longer periods. Also, because you have more stable attention and feel satisfied with your progress, your meditations are often pleasant. You have to learn to distinguish this more wholesome kind of pleasure from the pleasurable feelings of subtle dullness. Pleasantness by itself isn't a reliable sign of subtle dullness. Dullness of any kind is always pleasant, except when we actively resist. Consider things like alcohol, drugs, and forms of mindless entertainment. These all provide a much sought-after kind of pleasurable dullness. We become relaxed and pleasantly numb. Our awareness is hazy at best, and our attention is free-floating. Although this is quite different from dullness in meditation, it clearly shows why the pleasure of dullness is so seductive. Subtle dullness in meditation is actually more like the relaxed state you might experience sitting in a lounge chair, eyes closed, under a beach umbrella on a warm day. Or consider the comfortable state of resting on the couch after a big holiday feast. You're not asleep, or even sleepy. You still seem somewhat aware of what's happening around you. It may even seem like you have a clear mind, but you're actually not very alert. This is exactly the kind of deeper, but still stable, subtle dullness that can arise in meditation and be intentionally cultivated if we don't understand what's happening. We can train ourselves to remain in this state for extended periods. As mentioned, such dullness can make us think we've achieved the exclusive focus and blissful states of the later stages. When our practice is this enjoyable, there's a strong temptation to see ourselves as adept meditators. Once again, pleasurable subtle dullness is a trap and a dead end. You must recognize and avoid that trap. At first, it may be difficult to distinguish between the wholesome pleasure of stable attention and the pleasure of subtle dullness, but in time you will recognize the warm, soft, quiet pleasure of subtle dullness as something quite different from the bright, alert enjoyment of being in the flow of mindfulness. Detecting and countering the deepening of subtle dullness. The signs that dullness is growing deeper include decreasing vividness and clarity, fading peripheral awareness, and seductive pleasure. However, detecting these signs is harder because dullness causes introspective awareness to fade. So how can we recognize them when we're already being affected? One thing that helps is certain kinds of involuntary responses, such as the startle reaction. If some disturbance, an unexpected sound, someone coughing or a door slamming, causes you to jerk or feel inwardly startled, then dullness was probably present. Other examples are when you're surprised to find yourself taking a deep breath, or when you suddenly find yourself correcting for a slumping posture. If you were really mindful, you would have been aware of needing to do these things before they happened automatically. As a general rule, the more mindful you are in the moment, the more difficult it is to be either startled or surprised. Once you've been startled into a state of greater awareness, reflect on and examine the quality of your meditation just before you were startled. This will help you recognize the characteristic signs of subtle dullness. Still, you don't have to wait until you're startled to recognize the deepening of subtle dullness. You should intentionally check in from time to time as well. Compare your present awareness and attention with previous meditation sessions when you felt particularly sharp and alert. You can also compare your awareness and attention with earlier times in the same sitting. It's even helpful to examine your meditation session after it's ended, searching for any signs that subtle dullness may have been present. This will teach you to recognize dullness more easily next time. Finally, another sign that you are sitting in subtle dullness is when you feel sluggish or spacey after practicing. When this happens, recall, as best you can, what you were experiencing during your meditation, which will also help you recognize dullness in the future. The best way to detect subtle dullness is by making introspective awareness stronger. The key to doing that is intention. In stages 2 and 3, you intentionally emphasized continuous extrospective awareness. Now you must strengthen your introspective awareness. Hold the intention to remain continuously aware of what's happening in the mind, moment by moment. Be aware of which subtle distractions are present and how frequently attention shifts back and forth between them and the breath. Be aware not only of the contents of your mind, thoughts, feelings, underlying intentions, and so forth, but also of the activities of your mind. At the same time, keep cultivating the intention to observe the meditation object continuously with as much intensity and clarity as possible. That means you also need to hold the intention to know how well you're fulfilling this intention, which of course requires still more introspective.